Good evening. I see a lot of really familiar faces, and I think I see some new faces, at least faces that are new to me. Welcome. My name's Chuck, and I've been practicing here for about 8 years. And I'm going to talk a little bit about kindness. We've been working with the study of compassion, and I've been considering how these things arise in our lives and how we perceive them and how we work with them, and I just keep coming back to kindness as being such a base for so much of how we gear ourselves in this practice. Initially, I was going to have a talk on the Model A Ford truck in the driveway next door and how it relates to the Dharma. But I decided it would be far too complex. So I'm taking the perspective of a father of five, husband of two, and all this experience that has come to this point in my life where so much of our lives leading up to wherever we end up, every now and then we look back, you know, every now and then we kind of assess, wow, how did I really get here? Really? I mean, how did I really get here? And you see all these things that you thought were inconsequential, but were actually how you got here. And so part of this looking at kindness stretches way, way back to family and to my role models, which were my parents. And they were really kind people. And they were very non-judgmental. They were far less judgmental than I am. And I usually perceive myself as not being real judgmental until I really start looking at it and then realize that we're all pretty judgmental. And I think a wonderful thing about this practice, simultaneously a curse of the practice, is that all of a sudden you start noticing so much, especially about yourself, but just about everything. And I'm going to touch on this again and again because it's that noticing that that helps you see your judgments and helps you see where you think you want to be, the direction you think you're going in or that you aspire to, and how that changes as you age, and how as we approach 70, we look back more and more about the structure of how we've evolved in this life and how we've come to this place of being whoever we are. And so I look at it as working toward kindness. I always thought it was really easy to be friendly to people. I still think it's easy to be friendly to people. But there's something about being unconditionally kind. That's a whole different thing. That makes you look really deep. It really makes you try to understand more and try to pay attention even more than you already are. And so, going back to my parents, it was the open door policy. Any of my friends could move in and out and eat there and sleep there and be there, and Dad would do ding repair on surfboards and on, you know, and I always appreciated his kindness and his openness, and yet I didn't really clearly see it until I was an adult and had that clear hindsight of what was and what isn't anymore. And it's made me look at how am I like him and how am I not like him. So this whole study in kindness is a lot, as you can see, about self-evaluation without the heavy hand. It's the self-evaluation that's a kind evaluation, that's trying to see everything that you can possibly see to the best of your ability. And in Sangha practice like we have, you're frequently bouncing it off of others all the time, which is another interesting part of this whole thing. That there are frameworks to work within when you work in Sangha. So I'm not just working by myself or for myself, but we have these practices together. So I initially thought I'd have everybody chant the Metta Sutta together, but instead of doing that, I'm going to dance around how the Metta Sutta shows up at the jail when I go on Friday. We have this great practice here at Santa Cruz Zen Center of cooking for the homeless garden and the River Street shelter, and we've been doing it for really a pretty good stretch of time. I think Patrick's been doing it probably 7 years, and I've been participating for about 6 years. And so there's that community practice. We work together, but then we enlarge our community by going out into the community. So the Sangha goes out and makes kind of a larger Sangha and interacts with the community at large. And so that's been a wonderful practice that, I didn't think I had many judgments. And, I think the first couple times I showed up at the homeless garden, I had all these preconceived ideas of what homelessness was. And then I discovered, you know, it wasn't all about drug abuse. It wasn't about alcoholism. It was more about the economy. And it just, you know, I'm really slow. I'm a really slow learner, and when I saw that, it was like a slap in the face, and it was real clear that, oh, here I was carrying these judgments that I didn't even realize I had, and it got turned around in like an instant. I started talking to people. I certainly have no trouble talking to people. Talking to people at the garden and kind of learning their story, and they were all really interesting people. And there were a lot of professional people that had lost their job, and then they lost their home, and then they were living in a car. And there are certainly people that have had their drug issues and alcoholism issues, but that wasn't the majority. And so this kindness practice of feeding people, of sitting down and eating with people, of communicating and making the face-to-face with people, it's a wonderful practice. And it shows you a lot about yourself when you're in that process of connecting. As you could probably guess, I'm a product of the 60s. I had some very mind-altering experiences in the mid-60s and late 60s that remind me of Patrick. And they remind me of Patrick because Patrick reels out this great story about the interconnectedness of all things. Not just all people, but all things. And so I think a lot of us had that experience in the 60s. And we got shaken by the interconnectedness of all things. And some of us remember it really well. And even though we don't practice the same way we did in the 60s, we practice a different way now. And but those experiences were really meaningful because they shifted our way of looking at things and allowed us to see things in a much bigger way. I'm afraid normally we look at things in a real small way, in a real limited way. So sometimes, in a lot of different circumstances, we have an opening. And so the Homeless Garden Project is like that. It's an opening. It tells you real clearly, if you pay attention, that there's an interconnectedness with all things. You've got all these plants all around you to feed people. You also have plants all around you that are just there for beauty. You have all these people around you that are working really hard. And they're not complaining, most of them. And they're just so interconnected. And so when you go there, you get to be part of that. When you come here, you get to be part of that. When you take care of your granddaughter on Wednesday, same thing. So what I learned right away about this practice was it was very experiential, you know. I've been told so many times, oh, just don't believe that. Try it. Practice it. See for yourself. Does it work? Is it true? You know, what's it mean? And so in practicing, the curse of paying attention and just filling yourself with all the information and trying to drop some of the judgments about the information and the interconnectedness, it is so good and so clear that this is kind of putting practice in action. You know, our primary practice is sitting, just facing the wall, dropping the story, trying to be present. Not daydreaming, but trying to just be present. And it's a really hard practice. It's really difficult. And I can sit really still now. But boy, that brain doesn't stop. It just keeps going and reeling out the stories. And as you recognize them as stories, oh, this is my story about that. As you recognize that it's the story, it makes it a little bit easier to drop it. But it's still difficult because it's my story. And I want to hold on to it. But I know my story is not always real accurate. So I'm learning to drop the story real slowly. So I want to get back to the jail. After we go to the Homeless Garden Project with our soup and our rice, and sometimes cornbread and other things sometimes, then I have a date with some Vipassana folks who drafted me to go to the jail because they thought I would like it. And they were right. I like it. I've seen now 6 of my former students there. I was a high school, continuation high school teacher for 30 years. So I had a lot of local boys that had some behavior issues. And some of those behaviors have not changed. And some of them are now in their mid or late 30s. Actually, some of them are over 40. But because of their causes and conditions, their circumstances, which were unlike mine, they are exactly where they are. And yes, certainly they've made lots of choices along the way. But I can't help but reflect that their causes and conditions put them there. That it wasn't just about their choices. It wasn't just that. It was their whole background. And so we go to the jail, and instead of saying loving kindness, we say kind friendliness. Because in the jail, loving kindness is not as cool. They've got their judgments too. And so the way we approach a particular audience has an appropriateness. And I guess that's the other reason that I was asked to go to the jail. I'm inappropriate in a lot of situations, but I'm very appropriate at the jail. So the practice with the men at the jail, we see 2 cell blocks every Friday, and any number can show up, and it could be 1 or it can be 12. And we do 2 guided meditations. One is like a relaxing body scan. And then we do a Buddhist teaching. And then we do a metta guided meditation of loving kindness. And the idea is to get these guys to lighten up and to open up. And I've seen some really remarkable things at the jail. My wife thinks I'm a hero because I go to the jail. I don't want to dispel that myth. However, I have told her that it's no big deal. It's a lot like going to school. It's a lot like going to school. So here's this practice again. Interconnectedness. Just showing up, doing your best to show up and be positive and do something that you think might relieve a little suffering. And apparently it does. Because a lot of the guys that come frequently acknowledge it every single time. Oh, I'm really glad you guys come. I'm really glad to see you. I'm really grateful that you spend your time doing this. And it's really not a big deal. And yet, in their mind, in their perspective, it's a big deal. It's a big deal. And just like with the garden, I'm not always up for it. And yet I found with the first few years, I was really enthusiastic for quite a while. And then after a few years, maybe I got lazy. But I would grumble to myself, I don't know if I want to go cook today. And then I would do the classic practice. Oh, all I got to do is show up. And I would show up, and Patrick would make me happy. Patrick, do you have any idea what a wonderful thing you're doing? But you always show up, don't you? That's what it's a remarkable thing to me. The simplicity of that. Oh, I just have to show up. If I could just show up, everything else will fall into place. If I show up every morning and I sit, my mind might be going nutso, but I'm always glad that I showed up. There's never been a time. And I think for the last couple of years, I've been showing up pretty much every morning. And so that's part of the interconnectedness. It's part of my cultivating kindness, starting with me. If I work a little bit on this one, maybe I'll be better at working with others, you know? If I can let go a little bit of my story, maybe I can listen better to somebody else's story. And that's very much what the Costa Noa School project was this year too, was showing up. And I got to do that one with Stan. And boy, did I have my judgments about that one. And I was going back to a school where I had worked for years and years and years. And I know the population really, really well. And I really appreciate them. But my struggle wasn't with the kids. It was with our format of teaching and all my ideas and judgments about our teaching approach. I had a ton of ideas and judgments. And that was my story. And so, you know, it made for more work. And isn't that how it always works out? You're making more work for yourself, really. And so it wasn't something so much that I sat with as it was a walking meditation. It was a continuum of thought of the balance of negativity and positive and trying to sort out where I was in the whole thing. And so Stan and I worked with a mindfulness group of people, and we were selected to do Costa Noa High School together. And here again, I had preconceived ideas of how this was going to play out. And I actually, in the beginning, thought that I would be in a rotating group of teachers where I would probably teach 1 week out of a month. And then I found out it was every week. And so I had to show up. And then it was okay. It was okay to show up. But then I had all my issues. But I still had to show up. So we showed up right to the end of the year. And it was another practice. It was connection with kids. It was connection with staff there. It was connection with Stan. It was my own struggle of my own judgments and my own perceptions and my own story. And so I got to work with that too. I'm still working with that story. I think that one keeps going. So this is some more of the metta practice. This is some more of loving kindness. It's showing up. It's showing up with an open heart and an open mind. And if you're not a really slow learner like I am, you catch right away that I got to drop a lot of my preconceived judgments and ideas if I want to be effective at all. And it's a really hard struggle for me. And before I came to practice, I always thought I was just the most easygoing guy there was, except for my dad, and he was a little bit more easygoing than me. And then practice kind of showed me that I wasn't as patient as I thought I was. I was way more judgmental than I thought I was. And so when you put yourself in all these different venues, and I've been fortunate because as a retired teacher, I have a little bit of time. And so volunteering at the jail and volunteering to cook and volunteering at the school and volunteering to take care of my granddaughter one day a week, it's all a blessing and it's all possible because of all my causes and conditions that brought me right to this place right now. I get to live next door for a while. That's why it's really easy to walk over here and unlock the door at 5:15 in the morning. It's easy. It's not difficult. And that is not to say there are times when I would look at the clock and say, I don't want to get up. But it doesn't take very long and I'm out of there. And in moments, I can be over here. So I'm really fortunate because my causes and conditions brought me to this place where I can practice wholeheartedly, where I can involve myself in lots of good work, where I can watch my mind, where I can try for clarity, again and again, where I can keep dropping the story, where we sit and sit and sit, chant and chant and chant, sit and sit and sit some more. If you haven't had enough sitting during the week, then you just got to watch for the next session coming your way. I have to confess, for the past probably 3 or 4 sessions, you know, we have these 3 and 5 and 7 day sits. The last one was a 3 day sit, but there were no lectures. There was no chanting. There was no services. What am I leaving out, Kokyo?
There wasn't anything.
There wasn't anything. All we did was sit. We faced that wall. It was such an interesting wall for so long. And boy, did I have my judgments about that before it started. I did not want to sit that session. And at the same time, I knew I was going to. And so it took showing up to teach me the lesson that, oh, this is actually really great. This is really a great session. And I was always used to playing whatever role in the session, whether it was serving food or whatever. And this one was totally silent. There was no interaction. It was just sitting and more sitting and more sitting and a lot of sitting and being pretty quiet. And you know, when it was, we were into it about a day. I think it was after the first day I came to that realization that, wow, this is actually pretty great. I had all these ideas about, I don't think this is going to be good without lectures and stuff. Lectures give you a break.
Toys.
No toys, Sashin. No toys. I think that term is so funny. So once again, what came up for me, I wasn't being very kind to myself and being patient to wait and see just show up and see what unfolds. I want to prejudge it. I want to figure out it ahead of time and have my ideas about it. And then stick to them as long as I can. Until finally you realize that, boy, you were all wet. You're totally wrong, and this is really special. It was really different than any other sesshin that I've been sitting at. And it was great. It was just great. So at Costa Noa High School, mindfulness practice was all about paying attention, paying attention, paying attention. And we're working with kids with kind of out there behaviors. And so just to get them to pay attention, period, is a big job. And yet we had some great kids that had really good hearts, that really wanted to be there, and really wanted to kind of evolve a little bit, kind of change a little bit of some of their habits and some of their tendencies that were, again, all about their causes and conditions that brought them right to that place. And so all we did was show up and give them some guidelines and give them some things to work at and encourage them. You know, you could do this at home. Next time you're not getting along with your mom, instead of going off on her, why don't you count to three and see if it makes any difference at all. See if you can think before you respond. See if you can be mindful at all. Do you notice what pushes your buttons? If you see it coming, can you stop it? So just like we work with our mind, we were really asking the kids to work with their mind and their bodies and their reactivity and their habits. And by the end of the year, we had this little group of kids and they were great. And I saw two of them today. So my practice leaks. It leaks into the community. And I feel I'm really fortunate that that happens. And the questions keep coming up to me. You know, can I be more mindful? Because I'm a real airhead a lot of the time. And it bothers me a lot. And instead of beating myself up about it, I'm trying to learn how to be kind with it and be more patient with myself and be less judgmental. And seeing the judgments that repeat themselves again and again and again and again makes me feel that it's just all so slow. This change that we want to occur, you know, this is where my striving is. Oh, I want this. I want to do better at this. I want this change to occur, and it frequently falls apart. You know, it goes by the wayside. I find myself not paying attention frequently. So, I think filling ourselves with the work at hand and recognizing that everything we do, whether it's going to work to a job that we like or going to work to a job we don't like, whether it's volunteer work, doesn't matter. It's showing up and showing up and showing up. And it's the mindfulness of every moment and every connection that you make, ones that you don't think are significant, and then you end up finding out that they're more significant than you realized. Allowing a allowing yourself to try to be awake by meeting every moment as fresh as you can, as honestly as you can, as open-hearted as you can, and utilizing that effort all the time. And, you know, we shouldn't be striving. We should be learning to accept things kind of as they are, without all of our judgments, without all of our baggage. But in my heart, I know from a long, long, long time ago, I was always looking at what's the right thing to do? What's not just benefiting me? What's also benefiting others? So the Sangha work is always there, but if you take the big view, everything is the same. When you're out in the world, it's all there. All of those moments, all of those opportunities, all the judgments that come up that block your way from being open to the opportunities that arise, I think they kind of fog our vision. They don't allow us to be clear. I want to read you a poem, but I'd like to open this up for discussion before I do that. I've said a lot about different practices that I've mostly gleaned from the Zen Center. And they've all been really, really good opportunities for me. And I'll keep doing them as long as I can. But I also have that... I have that concern about time, you know? And I think that we tend to do this thing incrementally by decades. Remember when you were 20 and you thought 30 was old? And when you were 30 and you thought 40 was old? And then when you were 40, you thought 50 was old? And now I'm moving away from half of the crowd. But it happened when I was 50, when I thought 60 was old, and now that I'm almost 70, it's really hard to let go of those ideas, you know? But the relevance of time keeps being important to me because I feel like, oh, as long as I can do, it's okay. So I'm real grateful that I can do. I'm doing a lot and I'm really enjoying a lot. And I know it won't last forever. So anyone that would like to share their experience of how they look at the work of kindness and how that interfaces with compassion, it's very core to our practice, and it's really core to the global Sangha work that Patrick initiated, but it's also core to a lot of what we do in Sangha and beyond all the time. And I know in our Sangha we have therapists that I think, or I have to assume, kind of experience that all the time, that they're always putting themselves out there. That they're always connecting with someone. That the connection that they're making is more important maybe than other connections sometimes. Because they're benefiting somebody else. Because they're doing their best to open their heart. And whether they say anything or not, they're a good listener. And so, if you think about it, it doesn't matter what you do because you're still touching other people. Unless you're sitting at a screen all day, and even then you're interacting. But I just think of this practice, that it's work, because as nice as you can be, there's parts of it that are work. So you can be a naturally wonderful person. You can be naturally really generous. And it's still work. Patrick. Thank you, Patrick. Laurie?
At funeral, I also go into the jail. I go in and take 12-step meetings into the jail. I am always, my ego is always fed largely, which is sometimes really negative. And I'm always surprised how often I get, you know, isn't it so wonderful you go into the jail? And I do lots of things that are way harder. I sponsor people that are harder than the people in the jail. So, and nobody ever thanks me for that. So it's funny, you know, what we get thankful and what we don't and what it means to want to go. Anyway. So one of the things I have started doing is making a really serious effort at being really kind to the sheriffs there. All of the people that work in the jail, I try to be kind to them. If I notice something they do, I try to point it out and thank them for it. My own preconceptions, judgments, causes and conditions, and all of that, it does not dispose me nicely as sheriffs. I'm much, much more likely to be kind to people who are in there than people who work there. So it has been, and we have a great jail. Yeah, I mean, not a great jail. We have, despite the grand jury report, any of the people in the jail here will tell you that the law enforcement people we have in this city and our sheriffs in our jail is way better than any of the other counties in California and some of the prisons. And there's lots of people have been in lots of them, so they can tell. So this is like, you know, they call Blaine Street Camp Snoopy, which I think is hysterical. Anyway, so, but because I have noticed that judgment in myself, I make a really serious effort to be kind to them. Because it really is this thing about being connected. If they are not appreciated, well, that's just going to leak all over the jail. And they're doing a good job, and they're doing the best they can, given all of the other things that are going on. And so it's been a good practice for me. It's changed some of my attitudes. And it's just sort of generally just been a good practice for me, picking out the one part where I'm the least likely to succeed to be kind with the prisoners. Is. But the sheriff's not the most, so I've been seriously practicing that. Good thing to do.
It's a good practice. Talk about judgments. Law enforcement has a real mixed bag, you know. Lots of judgments from the nicest people. I think that your practice is a really good one to, first of all, pay attention to, oh, here's these guys doing this really hard job and they're doing the best they can. And like with any system, there's positive and negative. And yet, looking beyond that and dropping those judgments and just working at, can I honor these guys by noticing, by being present with them? We do a real similar thing when we go to the jail. We've, you know, befriended a lot of guards, and I do not envy their job at all. And you don't have to give them accolades, but to notice, which is what you're doing, you're noticing and you're extending kindness. That's a real big thing. And it's way more appropriate than accolades anyway. Thanks, Lori. Dan?
Chuck, I want to thank you for working with me and with our kids and how flexible and open you were. I really look forward to the planning sessions each Tuesday at 9:30 or so, or whatever it was, before we would actually do the class, and really trying to take into consideration all the factors, all the kids, what we'd done with them already, what their needs were, and how we were able to really flow with the kids as we did our sessions. And as we brought in guests, Kokyo, twice, and how much the kids enjoyed our practice and how much they did it themselves. And also just so happy to hear from the kids, as you remember, that many of them developed or were lovers of nature, and that would be their escape. They wouldn't go off, they'd get out. They'd go sit with some trees and then calm down when their moms, their parents were, we asked them, you know, how many generations has your family been dysfunctional? Put up numbers of fingers. It was at least two, and in some cases, three generations of family dysfunctionality. So they were really coping with a lot, and we were really there to support them in being the first generation not to fall into that pattern. So in working with those kind of kids, we both worked with them in the past, in our past lives, and being able to do it, I think, so well and so deeply with them, and how many of them really are committed to a daily practice that they do, was a real gift. And thank you.
You're welcome. Liz.
Wow.
And then thinking about this morning, I was a little cranky with somebody and feeling pressure for time. And we were kind of clashing, and she usually is cranky right back with me. And she asked if I wanted a cup of tea. And it was like totally changed the dynamic, you know. And when I think about it, it's really inspiring that some, you know, just like for just one person to kind of like turn to kindness, like kind of like I don't know where it came from, you know, but just like an inspiration, like maybe that would be nice, and it helped me be nice.
It has a certain contagiousness, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can, it's something that's the classic play it forward, you know?
Yeah.
If you can show the smallest kindness to somebody and you just don't know where it's going to go. And so it's nice if you can just always kind of put it out there. And I have the advantage of showing up here after I've already had a cup of coffee. So even if I'm unlocking the door at 5:15, it means I've already had at least a half a cup of coffee. And so I'm awake. So, and greeting people is always kind of a pleasure, you know. It's always, I mean, you're greeting them to come to practice. It's just, it's great. It's really nice. Thank you. So, if there are no other comments or questions, I'd like to read you a poem. Thank you, Richard. This is a really tough one. I had these two poems. Actually, there are far more than two in this book that I love, but Between Rice and Poppies. The poppies send up their orange flares, swaying in the wind. Their congregations are a levitation of bright dust, of thin and lacy leaves. There isn't a place in this world that doesn't sooner or later drown in the indigos of darkness. But for now, for a while, the roughage shines like a miracle as it floats above everything with its yellow hair. Of course, nothing stops the cold. Black curved blade from hooking forward, of course, loss is the great lesson. But also, I say this, that light is an invitation to happiness. And that happiness, when it's done right, is a kind of holiness, palatable and redemptive, inside the bright fields, touched by their rough and spongy gold. I am washed and washed in the river of earthly delight. And what are you going to do? What can you do about it, deep blue night? This is Mary Oliver, and she's one of a lot of your favorites, too. And Nanette's favorite, one of her favorites. But it made some visuals to me that that relate to kindness. How we only have so much time. And Nanette and I had an interesting, funny conversation real recently about don't waste time. And the concept of what that is, you know. When I'm tinkering with that Model A over there, am I wasting time? No, but if I'm daydreaming in Zazen, I am. So, we had a great conversation. And it was so much fun because all those concepts of what is wasting time and what isn't wasting time. And I wish I could elaborate fully, but I can't. But it was sure fun. And it was really fascinating to really take that to heart and really discuss it and talk it through a little bit and get the other's sense of what is this wasting time thing? And I've deduced that it's more about not showing up as wasting time. And that means not just showing up here, it means showing up for your life. It means showing up moment by moment. Every person you connect with, every person you come in contact with, even if no words are exchanged, it's showing up. It's being present. It's trying to be mindful in those moments, moment to moment to moment. And I think some of you are probably really good at it. And some of us have to struggle and work with it to be more present, to be more mindful about how we think, about how we speak, about how we show up, or if we show up. And so, at the very least, I hope I've given you just a little food for thought in how kindness shows up for you, how you put it into action and how you make it work. And I encourage you and admonish you to look out there at where your kindness lands and what it does. And appreciate yourself for the effort that you put forward when you're mindful enough to put the effort forward. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them.